Good Friday morning, folks. If it's 11 and you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, the community radio station right here at University of Winnipeg, you're listening to Of No Fixed Address. And if you're listening to that song, you're listening to Of No Fixed Address. And I've been asked a couple times, why that song? Well, because it's my commitment to the homeless and the vulnerable folks out there. How long will I be with you? Well, as long as you need me to. And it's really important that people know that somebody is working for them. And I, today, I have a great guest in the studio, Rick Schoen, who is running for mayor. Mr. Chairman, how are you doing, Rick?
Thank you. I'm doing great, and I really appreciate the invite. Good to be on the show.
Yeah, I'm really happy that you're on. You're one of the lesser known, people out there running. We have the big name folks, but it's nice to have somebody come from out of the blue, so to speak, and throw the hat in the ring, and it's really important that we have a really good variety of folks running and with different perspectives. And just before we get started, it's plus 50 right now, and it's not a bad day, going up to in the 20s, I think. And it might be a nice day for you and I, but it's not a nice day for the folks out there. If you're out there 24/7, 365 days a year, it's not nice at any particular day. And so we have to be cognizant of that. And as I always say, if you're going to Tim's, bring an extra cup of coffee, buy an extra cup of coffee, bring extra water, hand it up to somebody on the street, because you know that there's going to be somebody out there asking, if you're walking by your Canada Center, there's people out there that need that coffee more than you do. Mm-hmm. Rick, really, really happy again to have you on the air.
Yeah,
I just would like I do with every guest, I just ask if you would mind sharing a little bit about your past, mm-hmm. and about your biography. I know you're a business person and a person that owns a company.
I do.
And maybe, talk about a little bit about your past and what brought you to this particular stage.
Yeah, I mean, it's a relatively long story. I'll try to keep it pretty short.
Yeah, for sure.
But, I am a person who moved to Winnipeg back when I was probably 19. Mm-hmm. So my history goes back as far as that. When I moved to Winnipeg, I actually came for university and I didn't really have a place to go. I knew Winnipeg roughly because I had gone to school, high school in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. But I lived outside the city. And so I came to Winnipeg looking for a place to live. My first place to live just was a place where it was subsidized income housing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I lived there for about a year until I could get my feet under me. Going to school, I got three different jobs to make ends meet. I remember those days back in the day where I was kind of lying in bed, wake up in the morning and wondering where the rent is going to come from. So,
isn't that a panicky feeling, right?
Well, it really is. And, somebody the other day was saying that to me that they said, oh, well, you seem kind of relatable. And I said, well, it's because I can remember my roots,
you know,
and these days I do own a business, and I'm fortunate to have a great business. Mm-hmm. I own Wilderness Supply, which is a camping and outdoor outfitting store. We have a great team there, and we're all about the environment and low impact, mm-hmm. and challenging people to get outside and just pursue their goals from a physical and strengthening their mental fortitude as
For
well.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So about 5 years ago, I decided to invest in a building that's actually not too far away from here at U of W. It's mm-hmm. just over on Notre Dame and Isabel.
Yes.
And I had a lot of people ask me at that time, why would I do that? Because, the perception of the area was, why would you move your business to there? Mm-hmm. But I was working with another business, Independent Jewelers, who'd been in that area for a really long time.
They've been there for 100 years.
100 years, And we had this vision that if we could bring a few other businesses into that area, mm-hmm. we could start sort of elevating the perception of the neighborhood.
Yeah, parts
auto source, yes. and a couple of other really great businesses mm-hmm. in that neighborhood. And so I ended up buying the building and moving mm-hmm. our business to that that location. Mm-hmm. And it's been a great location.
Oh, awesome.
But the interesting thing for me, and as really relevant to this conversation, is at that time I started to be interested in the West End, Central, West Alexander, you know, downtown, and sort of just try to get an idea. I tried to get a better idea of where I was now, where was my business located. And I spent, you know, a few years just sort of walking the streets and biking around and, you know, getting to know the neighborhood and, you know, sort of different areas. And I discovered that there's a whole heck of a lot of things going on down here. A lot of people who are really proud to live down here, but obviously a lot of people who are facing some pretty challenging experiences as
We live in the poorest postal code, as they say, in the country. Right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's I've heard that being said a couple of times, definitely before. So that's sort of my history. Like as a person, I have you know, I'm a father. I also have a wife and two kids.
Awesome.
You know, I'm very active in the cycling community. I commute to work as much as I can, take the bus, and you know, I also drive, but I try to mix it up so that I can do my part and be environmentally friendly as possible as well.
That's really important these days.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, so I'm super happy to be here. And over the last 5 years, I've actually started to really learn a lot about some of the challenges that you know, many Winnipeggers are facing on the street. And, you know, I've really started to learn a lot. So I'm no expert by any means. But I have been, you know, I've been learning and listening to people who work in the in the field, whether the health professionals or shelters or, you know, a number of different areas. And I've been really fortunate to learn a lot from them about what compassion is, and also just like meeting people where they are at that stage in their life and not judging.
So why run for mayor?
Yeah. So well, when I. A couple things that have really struck me as I was working in this neighborhood. One, it was actually really hard to get my business opened because I had to go through a number of hoops and hurdles through the city.
Of course.
You know, so that was kind of where it started, like on the management and the logistical
and business bylaws side. And things
yeah,
like
exactly.
That, right?
We had a couple of bylaws that we had to, you know, and zoning bylaws that we had to kind of jump hoops through. And my neighbor had dealt with those previously, independent jewelers, so we learned from their lessons as well. I also sit on the board of West End Biz.
Oh, there you go.
I've been on the board of Central Neighborhoods Association as well for a couple of years.
Yeah, there's a bit of an indoctrination, right?
Yeah, exactly. So Central Board was really interesting to me. I sat on the board as a business member, but I got to know a lot of folks who live in the neighborhood as well. And that's where I started to really see how passionate people were for their neighborhood as well. And it was interesting because I started bringing a lot of people from all over the city to my business.
Nice.
You know, because a lot of people, you know, they come from all over the city to come to see what we have at our store.
Yep.
And we'd often hear questions like, oh, why did you put your business down here? Or how's the neighborhood? Or those kinds of things. And, you know, I started to really be passionate about sharing to them. It's like, well, I've met a lot of people who don't think the way that you think about this neighborhood. So you just kind of need to look around and maybe talk to a few people and change your perception and your mindset a little bit about what's going on.
You know, we always talk about, we always have to talk about stigma, right? And here's that here's that coming into play, right?
Yeah, totally. And, you know, from a business standpoint, you know, we have a lot of training with our staff as well about the folks who come in the door. And we really do want to treat everybody with fairness. But also from a business standpoint, we have to also be cognizant about making sure that we have, you know, certain policies like loss prevention.
Of course.
Those things in place,
well, you have
right?
to have those in place.
Yeah, exactly. So, but the number one thing in our shop and all of our sales team, you know, we really want to make sure that we're treating people with fairness and not judgment when they come into our store as well.
Yeah. And so how does that relate to running for mayor?
Yeah, definitely. So so I am coming from choosing to run for mayor from the standpoint on the business management side.
Yes.
I think that we as a city kind of really work too slowly. We need to speed things
up.
Yeah. Well, I've heard that so many times from some people working in the city. The city just works so slow. But I do think we need to speed things up. Are we going to get lightning speed? I'm not sure. But we do need to continually work to get better every single day.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's a lot of things, you know, as a city, we have, we're in a bit of a financial mess as well. So yes, we need to look at, you know, obviously coming out of COVID, you know, how do we, how do we get back in good shape?
That changes the matrix of everything.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. I mean, we're, as a business, we faced that as well, like mm-hmm. hard over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And it's been really tough for my staff, my team as well, you know, like many other mm-hmm. businesses.
Oh.
And then I can only imagine how challenging it's been for people who are living on the street as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it affected us, it affected them 10 times.
I totally agree. Yeah. And then so from the, like, from just looking at the social challenges, you know, that standpoint and why I chose to become, I want to become mayor mm-hmm. and I'm running for mm-hmm. this position is I think I can bring a real balance mm-hmm. of, you know, looking at the business side of the city and mm-hmm. how do we structure the leadership and the right. the culture of the city, changing it so that we're really, people oriented and serviced around mm-hmm. people. And also just saying, like, how can we do a better job of trying to help those folks in Winnipeg who are struggling with some major challenges, mm-hmm. And so, yeah, one of the major experiences that has sort of shaped my impressions is our time, you know, volunteering down with the Main Street Project. Mm-hmm. Every year, for the last 5 years, our business has kind of bucked the retail trend. We've, you know, everybody typically knows Black Friday. This is one example. Everybody knows Black Friday. Mm-hmm. It's a big retail crazy day. Yep. We have chosen to do something different where we actually shut down our stores and we close Black Friday because from an environmental standpoint, we also don't believe in just buying things for the sake of buying yeah. things. And I don't agree with that at all. But then we said, well, what can we do that's actually good for our community? And so we actually decided at that point 5 years ago to take our entire team. So we pay for our entire staff to work that day down at the Main Street Project.
Ah, nice.
And it's been an eye-opening experience.
I work very closely with Main Street Project on a lot of issues, including mm-hmm. Hope Alley and the memorial service.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to checking out the Hope Alley next week at the opening. So
yeah, it's they do wonderful work and certainly deserve support and actually need support for the amazing work that they do there.
Exactly.
I just want to start out. I have a list of things mm-hmm. that I want to talk to you about. But, you know, one of the things that I ask every person, and Deb will tell you, my wonderful producer and button pusher here that does all the technical work for me so I can actually just talk to people. She's heard me ask this question many times before. The province and the city don't have a good relationship.
Yes.
Or have a, let's put it this way, it's strained at best.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to really move forward and be progressive, that relationship needs to be better. And mm-hmm. we've seen signs of that with the new premier mm-hmm. Taking over. How important is that to you?
It's extremely important. Back in 2014, I watched where we had an experience in the city where, two leaders sort of went head to head for mm-hmm. whatever reason, and we had a basically closed door relationship with the province for the next
yes.
7 years.
Yes.
So that's been a major issue. We've been, we've been really stalled in that respect. And I also agree. I have seen some positive strides in mm-hmm. With the new premier. And the mayor, which is a nice thing, and I think mm-hmm. we need to continue those types of relations going yes. on. I think, you know, regardless of whether you differ in opinion or political stripe,
right.
From a municipal standpoint, and this is why I really, really love municipal politics, mm-hmm. is that, you know, here our job is to basically look at what are the real needs of the people who live in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. It's not left or it's not right or it's not even really center. It's just finding out what is the most important thing that mm-hmm. really will make people's lives better.
Entirely.
Exactly. And so, yeah, having that closed door relationship was very brutal. I am a person who believes that relationships are really powerful mm-hmm. and you can really do a lot of great things when you can get people on the same page and sort of aligned with the same vision as mm-hmm. you. Sometimes, you know, provincial and municipal, they may be not aligned with the same goals and interests. And I think that's where the job of the mayor is to work really hard to bring those two people to the table. You're not not going to win on everything, but we really do need to find a common path that gets you pretty darn close to the place you need to be.
With those, and there's different financial dynamics to both the provincial and civic policies and everything. And one of the things that stood out when I was doing my homework, it was you talked about the police, and it seems to be something that you that is really near the top of your list as to an agenda should you be elected.
Yeah. So and that was a big topic, obviously, yesterday. I mean, I've there are a number of different things that are really big priorities and platform issues that have brought to, like, I've brought to the front because they're important to me, but they're important to the people that I've been listening to. Do think that I do believe, like a lot of people, there is a place for police in our society for sure. And yesterday, my announcement was sort of just a recognition that when it comes to the point that, you know, we're losing public trust or we're having trouble, maintaining response times or morale in a workforce or those kinds of things, you do need to look at the leadership. And we were in a place in the city where we extended this the contract for the chief a couple of years ago. I wasn't in agreement with it back then. They they did it for whatever reason, but the leadership really matters to me. And I think it's a lot of people ask me, well, how is this going to translate into better policing or better services or things like that? It's like, well, first of all, you need a leader who will be communicative. He or she will communicate with the workforce and help inspire them and empower them. And, you know, they work hard every day to try to do their job. But it is one of those things that sometimes you just need somebody outside of yourself to motivate you, and to inspire you to that you're still doing a great job. And I think you need a leader in this position, somebody who also has a little bit of business sense and can help work with the city to recognize that we are spending a lot of money on emergency services, right? And this is something that I've looked at deeply into the budget, and I've actually went back into the last 25 budgets to see how can we just, how can we fix some of these financial challenges that we are facing. And I have yet to come to any quick solution. Most of them are relatively long term. And I know from organizational behavior that to change a large organization when you're up against existing contract agreements and those kinds of things, it does take time.
It does.
Yeah. But we need to look at it. I think the first thing we need to do is change the leadership and also somebody who can come in and work with the police force to look at what modern policing looks like.
So then I would imagine that you'd be looking at the police board. What is your opinion on the police board?
So I think that, I understand why the police board was set up the way it was to have sort of an independent and relatively independent group of people who are made up from council, province, and community. I think that there can be some really... I think that there can be some really good voices on there.
Kind of at arm's length, right?
Yeah, it's kind of at arm's length. The challenge where it puts the city into an interesting spot is that while they have the city and council and mayor and council, they still have ability to, control the budget to a certain extent.
For sure.
When they're faced with a situation where, say, the police go over budget, there's not much that they can do at that point other than pay the bill. And so this arm's length relationship with the board can be a good thing, whereas that it kind of takes the council out of the micromanaging the police force and sort of dictating it depending on, dictating how they do and what they do things based on political interests.
Right.
But it does make it much more challenging to have direct control over certain aspects of the operations of the police when they need to, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And so then it really comes down to what does your board look like? What does your board makeup look like? And, that's not just one person, but it has to be a really good, solid board who understands all of the social issues that we face. They understand the financial issues that we face.
And I think maybe that might be something that is lacking there, that might not be that total understanding. understanding of what the police force is.
Exactly. And so that was one of the things I had said yesterday, is that I've been thinking about this for a while, is that if that's the way that we have, you know, influence over the police and what to, and sort of the culture change, then when we look for a new police chief, you know, the mayor needs to sit on that board and have that direct influence. Yeah. And for me, looking at, you know, 20 years of learning what we're looking for in leadership, bringing those skills to the police board and making sure that we find the right leader for, you know, for the service, it's really, really important.
Well, keep those police trainers on board, because that's who I am.
I know. You told me about that earlier, and I'm super happy to hear that.
Yeah, so. My role with them is to bring homeless awareness, and these are the people on the front line, and they need to know who those folks are and how to interact with them, and build those relationships, right? Because everything is about relationships and knowing, you know, the folks on the street, the vulnerable here. Folks, you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station right here at University of Winnipeg. And it's a nice 16 degrees out at the moment, and but not always for the folks that are living out there. My guest today is Rick Schoen, a mayoral candidate, if I can use that term. And we're talking about his vision for the city and what he would like to see happen should he become mayor. And along with the police, again, I'll just bring in to what is really on the top of my list all the time, and that is the homeless situation, as I spent 28 months on our streets and managed to claw my way back and be here today. You know, I spent 3 hours with city council on homeless awareness right around the time when the subject matter came up about the bus shelters out in EK Transcona there. And, you know, there's just seems to be a genuine lack of understanding about who those folks are. And you know, the fear there was, well, you know, they're a harm to our children, or they're, you know, they're scaring our children, and we don't feel safe. And, well, you know, I can go by any homeless shelter, any bus shelter. I can go into any bus shelter and not be afraid. There's a general misconception about, you know, who the homeless are, and one of my jobs is to erase that. You know, I know there's no concrete answer to homelessness, because that was lost, you know, starting back in 1993 when the federal government stopped the building of socialized housing. And that's one of the reasons why we are here today, never mind pandemic and all that kind of stuff. But what are your thoughts on the homeless situation in our city, and what direction, you know, we should go?
Yeah, I mean, I've taken a lot of time to just speak to, you know, people like I mentioned, Main Street Project and Nine Circles, and a number of different organizations, and they've really helped shape my understanding of the situation, which I would suggest is by no means, you know, fully comprehensive.
There's no easy answer.
There's no easy answer. You know, and it was an interesting conversation that I had with somebody at one point was, you know, I said, well, okay, if we were to potentially house, like if we were to be able to house everybody on the street right now,
we couldn't serve them.
Yeah, and I said, like, how many people do you think that would be? And so the answer I had got was about
1,500.
Yeah, that's what I had. Yep. So I'd actually, a little higher was about 1,700. Yeah. So around that range, let's just say, right? So then we started looking at the amount of physical housing and that's available right now. And to put everybody into physical housing at the moment, it's just not possible because there's just not, the supply is there. If you're going to build more, it does take time.
Absolutely not.
So then I was like, okay, well, what kind of housing do we need, actually? Do we need just one type?
No, we don't. We need housing that's suited to different cultures and populations, right?
Yeah.
And also, what people forget, it's not just about putting people in housing. It's about supporting those people in housing. And I would say, people don't like it when I say we can't end homelessness. We cannot, because, you know, even if the federal government dropped in enough money, they're just dribbles and drabbles right now that they're giving us. I sit on, I'm vice chair of the Community Advisory Board, where we determine where the money goes for the homeless sector in Winnipeg.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's just not enough money that the federal government can bring to the table. And even if the public or the private sector stepped in and became an equal partner, and instead of causing more problems, with financialized housing, which is what they're doing now, and started producing instead, we still couldn't do it because we would not have the capacity to support those people in their housing. Mm-hmm. And you can't put people in housing without supports. And I've served in the housing first sector as a case manager. I know, you know, how that works. It's such a complex issue.
It's very complex,
And you're absolutely right. There is not enough housing right now. Mm-hmm. And it's a problem. And people say, why are they in their camps? Why are they in our parks? Well, there's just not enough housing. Yeah. People are trying to house folks. And, you know, we do have enough housing to house everybody in empty units. However, the cost is not in the socialized housing range there. Mm-hmm. And I implore everybody not to talk to me about affordable housing, because it means different things to a person making $10,000 a month compared to a person making $800 a month.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've one of the other things that I had brought up earlier was about vacant properties. Mm. One of the reasons why I brought that up, well, two reasons. One is for all the people who are passionate in my neighborhood, it really brings down the look of the neighborhood. Right. And they don't like that because they're working hard to make it, make a good impression.
For sure.
But the other challenge is that, the other challenge is when it's owned by a like a person who's using it as a rental, mm-hmm. but no longer has the ability to manage that property. It sits vacant, and that's actually housing that could be used for people who are lower income or with no income. Yep. And so we're sitting with all this housing stock that's basically sitting empty, mm-hmm. and we need to be able to find a way to look at that first, mm-hmm. and can we get that back up? Like I do, the longer those houses sit vacant,
the worse it is.
They're getting worse and worse, and essentially at some point you're probably just going to tear them down.
And that came up in the news not that long ago, about 2 weeks ago or something, about all the vacant housing, and board of housing in our city, mm-hmm. and what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of those properties could still be used and refurbished and renovated into proper housing.
I have one right across the street from my business. It's mm-hmm. a big complex that's, it was social housing. It was sitting vacant right now because it wasn't built properly.
But, I know that. Of course, right there on Isabel. Yeah. Right? And there's, probably 40, 50 units.
Oh, easy. There. Yeah, and, easy. Yeah. And it's been empty now for a couple of years.
That's exactly the kind of thing we're talking about. And, by the same token, we also need the province to step in and help out because, look at 185 Smith, for example. Mm-hmm. There's 280 units in there, I think, and it was Manzo Housing, and they let it go.
Yep.
And then Sussex Realty, I believe it was Sussex.
I don't remember who
Sussex,
it is, but I do know the building.
I think it was Sussex or Smith, Smith Agencies mm-hmm. came in and purchased it for $16 million and spent double that money fixing it up. Mm-hmm. Like, why could Manitoba Housing not have just fixed them mm-hmm. up and kept them, mm-hmm. And sometimes things just boggle the mind, but, people always say the city has so little they can do, but we also have Winnipeg Housing, right?
Yep.
And I think that there is a lot of room for the city to do things. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think definitely if we're going to work towards solving a housing housing crisis, I mean, we need to basically have a solid plan to, to figure out what stock do we have available to us, what stock can we actually pinpoint and renew, and then what do we need to build?
And I know that, and we're just going to go to a music break in about a minute here, but what has really been a positive that the city with the federal government and the city have worked together on is the Rapid Housing Initiative.
That's right.
And we've created 140 units, I think, mm-hmm. in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And with different agencies specified for women fleeing violence and indigenous housing. But I also think that at one point in time we have to not categorize and just here is housing for the homeless no matter mm-hmm. who you are. And I think that's perhaps the next bit of funding that comes down for Rapid Housing Initiative. I'd like to see something like that happen, and because there are people that are slipping through the cracks because they are not, women, fleeing violence, and they are not this or they are not that.
Right.
And for me, it's really important as being a 2%er in when I found homelessness at the age 55, being a 2%, white male at age 55. Yeah. I was one of those that fell through the cracks, and I hate being left out of the equation, mm-hmm. and that's happened to a lot of people. Right. Yeah. But folks, you're listening to CKRW 95.9 FM, your community radio station, right here at University of Winnipeg. And today I have a really great guest on today, and Rick Schoen, and S-H-O-N-E, I believe, and running for mayor. And we'll be right back. We're just going to listen to, take a music break at the moment. Thanks. Come on. Stay tuned. Come back. Music you've been listening to for the last 90 seconds or so has been Winnipeg's own Ron Paley, and from the CD Sea of Time. My guest today is Rick Schoen, mayoral candidate, and we always run out of time talking about issues. I'm we're at a pretty critical time right now, and I think having the right mayor at this particular juncture, following the pandemic and all the, you know, things that have fallen since then, and the pressures that it has put on the city and the province and the federal government are immense, and we need the right people in place in council and in the mayor's office. I'm in my third term on the Human Rights Committee of Council, and I decided to ask for a third term because of unfinished business. I have unfinished business because we don't address the homeless issue enough. We can add, you, as you and I were talking, and I brought it up in council meetings, that, you know, we can give... I call them fluff issues, like putting non-Canadians or non-residents on committees for the city, but we can't address life and death issues because we lose 100 people on the streets every year, and we can't address life and death issues of the homeless. But I think I'm making a few strides in that direction, but we'll find out soon. What the question is at our strategic planning meeting 2 weeks ago was, will the new administration, will the new mayor and council, and the mayor in particular, because the mayor is the chair of the Human Rights Committee of Council, mm-hmm. which I sometimes argue against because I think it should be separate. Mm-hmm. But would you as mayor find value in keeping the Human Rights Committee of Council? It's been in place for about 5 years now, mm-hmm. and you know, it was three different committees before, but we combined them all into one and just called the Human mm-hmm. Rights Committee of Council. What is your opinion on having a Human Rights Committee?
Sure. I think that's a great committee to have. I mean, Winnipeg can be a leader in human rights in Canada. And, you know, we've shown that with the development of the Human Rights Museum, which mm-hmm. is a great place to, mm-hmm. you know, to learn about some of the atrocities sure. across the world, but mm-hmm. also here at home that have happened. You know, I've spent actually a lot of time in my life mm-hmm. traveling to places and learning about human rights and dignity in different things. And I've actually been to some interesting places where, you know, it's been war and mm-hmm. treatment of individuals through war. I spent, 6 months working with World Vision in Dhaka City in Bangladesh. Yep. Mm-hmm. I was in Calcutta, for a time. Mm-hmm. Spent 2 months working and traveling through India, just learning, you know, some mm-hmm. of the challenges that they have there. But I've also spent, time in many of the other areas learning about, just as people, how do we treat other people and yeah. why do we do this? Mm-hmm. Why do we treat people the way we do? And how can we treat people better and, you know, recognize that we are all the same and offer dignity and respect and, yes. and no judgment. And that's how I've, you know, my kids are, 12 and 13 and 11 now. And, you know, one of the things that I think I'm proud of raising them, mm-hmm. you know, in a way that, you know, they look at their people as people. Mm-hmm. They actually have, in my experience, have no judgment yeah. on other people.
Again, that's the biggest thing when I do my training. The first thing I say is, you know, if I leave you with anything today, it's going to be, I'll give you tools to get rid of those unconscious biases and mm-hmm. stigmas that you have against yeah. other folks, right?
Yeah, good point, because I think we all have bias, whether it's
we all do.
You know, it's conscious or
and
not.
Anybody that thinks they don't.
Exactly. I think the biggest thing that I've learned and I've tried to be aware of every day is self-awareness. Mm-hmm. Be aware of how yes. you think and really challenge why you think the way you do.
Entirely. I yeah. really appreciate that sentiment because I spend a lot of time, you know, talking on that particular mm-hmm. subject because, you know, we are so, we're not ready to admit that we do have those, but every single person does. And
yep.
me coming from a strict Mennonite background with mm-hmm. a name like Weeb, you know, I mean, yeah. those kinds of things were built in, and I had to really, really fight to get rid of those things.
Yes,
and you know, yeah, we need to, you know, do things better. But thanks for your answer on the Human Rights Committee.
Yeah,
if there's no more important thing than human rights, what is there, right?
Yes.
You know, we've had when it came to the bus shelters, we had one person say, and she's a friend of mine, but I disagree with her on a lot of things. But we had one person say that when it comes to hoarding, human rights don't matter. When it comes to bus shelters, human rights don't matter. Human rights matter all the time. We have to base everything that we do on human rights. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. whether you agree or disagree with the policy, but you have to base things on human rights and people's mm-hmm. lives, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
and
no, I agree.
And so that's you know where we you know the council stands on things, and when we hear things like that and hear city councilors not disagree or agree with that, those kinds of sentiments, there's something wrong, mm-hmm. you know, and we need to make changes there.
Yeah.
Secondly, I'm also on the core team with the poverty reduction strategy. We just launched that and made it public, you know, several months ago down at Thunderbird House. And, it's all fine and good. We spent well over a year on that and working with the community development team. And Noel DePop was just a wonderful person, and Aaron Skorkowski. And it's a great document and says a lot of great things, but it's just a document. It's mm-hmm. just a book if there's no funding to follow it.
Right.
And I think that, you know, and sure, what the city has done is added another housing person, you know, to the housing, to Winnipeg's housing coordinator mm-hmm. office, which is really, really good. But pretty much that's all that's been done, and we would really like to see a mayor come into place who will give attention and to the issue of the poverty reduction strategy. It's the first mm-hmm. one in our history,
yep.
and it's really important. What is your stand on addressing poverty?
Yeah, good point about it just being a document. And, mm-hmm. you know, I've spent a lot of time researching, you know, the city over the last few years and reading a lot mm-hmm. of different documents like the one, you know, that you mentioned. And we have a lot of great strategies yes. built, but mm-hmm. the one thing I've noticed is that our execution of these strategies are really actually quite poor. Mm-hmm. It's a great idea, but then when it comes to actually putting funding behind it, nobody wants to put their the effort into
yes.
it. And so I mean, first of all, poverty reduction, I think, is a major
yep.
challenge.
Key
and it is key. I mean, we want to make sure that, you know, all Winnipeggers of all walks of life are able to enjoy their city and to enjoy a good life.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fortunate these days to be sort of a middle income type mm-hmm. person. I'm definitely not the richest person
yeah.
in the city, nor do I even care to be yeah. because I'm quite happy with living within my means. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I remember again thinking back to those days when I was struggling to make ends meet. Those are times that are really hard because you can't focus on leisure time or
you can't.
You know, you're just basically trying to figure out how to survive till tomorrow. That's
exactly it. And you know, and one of the things Debbie's heard me say this many times is that we take, you know, when we're able to, we take people out of homelessness, but we drop them straight down into the crucible of poverty, and it's unrelenting.
Mm-hmm.
It's that anvil coming down and pestle coming down over and over and on yeah. itself, and it's unrelenting, and we can't get out of it. And you know, as a person who's experienced homelessness and as a person who's experienced abject poverty in housing
mm-hmm.
With responsibility, the aspect of living in poverty and housing is worse than it is in homelessness, because you have the responsibility of your kids, of a partner.
Yeah.
Of even animals that you can't support.
Yeah.
And, you know, what that causes is extreme trauma.
Yeah.
And, you know, at one point we were paying 80% of our rents, of our income to rents. And we ended up going from one apartment to another, sitting in the back of a burnt out garage a block from where we were living, because the landlord was playing hardball, wouldn't let us stay in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't like things like this to happen to mothers with kids, but they do happen on a regular basis. And you know, I think that mm-hmm. we need to really, really, you know, address poverty. And you know, part of that is, of course, having housing that people can live in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm a member of conversation I also had with a fellow from the Main Street Project, mm-hmm. and saying that like there are a lot of Winnipeggers right now who are living really close to the point where just, you know, one thing happens and
that's it.
You know, they aren't able to afford their housing and they can be homeless. You know,
there's just no room for crisis.
Yeah, they're living right on the edge, yeah. And so that's a very stressful place to be. For sure. But we need to figure out ways to support people. That, like, I've been also reviewing a lot of the new housing and apartments that's been going in and being built downtown. And like, I'm aware of the CMHC definition of affordable housing. And I spoke with a few people, you know, over the last couple of months and says, well, based on this definition, would you be able to live in this particular spot? You know, it's a one bedroom renting for around $1,000. And I think we figured out that you'd have to be bringing in around $45,000 a year to be able to fit the definition of affordable housing. And that just wasn't a reality
for it isn't.
You know, for a lot of people.
It really isn't. One of those things that we can talk about when it comes to poverty is transit. Never mind the climate control or the climate issues. But, you know, I'm on the steering committee for Make Poverty History Manitoba.
Okay.
And we did help get bus fare reduced by 30% for people living beneath the poverty line.
Yeah.
And I think right now they're about to install a 50% rate. I'm not sure about that. I was told by one person that it went council that it was, and by another person that it's coming. What is your stand on reduced fares? And I think the ultimate goal is around 30%.
Yeah, I've reviewed all the fare structures on there. I'm really happy to see that we have what they're calling on there a lower income bus fare.
Yeah.
But I mean, it can definitely still be challenging. Like, if you consider that. You know, when I take the bus, if I'm taking the bus to work and I'm paying, you know, a few dollars, and then I take the bus back home later on and it's a few dollars, you know, I know the lower income rate is different, but, you know, that's $6 a day.
Sure it is.
Let's say I got to go take the bus somewhere else.
Yeah, that comes out of a lot of people's food money.
Exactly. Right? So, and then, you know, you can obviously, depending on what type of fare, you know, pass or whatever you get, you can change the structure of that fee. But the reality is it's still money that you have to pay out of pocket for transit. And that's your only way of getting around. Right. And so,
you know, as a person living in poverty, living on welfare, I had job offers that I couldn't take because it would have cost me 3 weeks worth of food money to take that job before I got paid.
Yeah.
And that would leave us with no food.
Yeah.
Like, how do you rationalize that? And you know, that kind of thing really needs to be addressed. And sure, they'll say, well, doesn't welfare give you a bus pass? Well, no, right now they don't even give people bus pass unless they're on disability.
Okay.
And so, and they make it really, really difficult for people to get bus passes because you have to go to the doctor four times a week. So, you know, there's some really archaic and cruel, you know, measures in place put on by the EIA.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about myself growing up and, you know, my parents were relatively hardworking. We didn't have a lot of money growing up, and we often were sort of feeling like, you know, there wasn't a lot of money to go around. And the one advantage I had was to just see that they were always, you know, they were supportive, and I grew up with a really good family. So thankfully, even when I moved to the city, I didn't really have much money to scrape together.
Yeah.
You know, I sort of had that history, but if you don't have that supports and, you know, those kinds of things,
that's
it can
the
be
thing.
Really challenging as
that's
well.
That's the thing. If people don't have supports, they don't have anywhere to go, you know. And, you know, it's not only people in welfare, but people in low income. And, you know, just not a simple thing, but a thing like a dental problem. If you have no coverage and you're making $11 an hour and you have no coverage, what do you do? There's nowhere to go except for maybe the University of Manitoba.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's some serious issues, and that is more of a provincial thing, but it just brings to bear.
I mean, I always look back to, again, from like a financial management standpoint of my own personal finances. You know, it's something I had to learn along the way. Like, how do I manage with a limited amount of money?
Yeah.
You know, and those things, like, I experience this now as I am older and have a business and have worked my way to this point. You know, it's easier because I don't always have to think about every nickel.
Yep,
I'm fortunate in that respect, right? But then when I look back and I think about, you know, how I was when I was younger and other people who are in this situation now, like, when you don't have a lot of money, you know, you really have to think about how do you spend every single dime. Yeah. And that's challenging.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, it's I've lived through it.
It's so challenging.
It is so challenging. Yeah. And, you know, people treat other people in poverty like they're stupid. We're not stupid, and people are not stupid. They're just desperate. And you know, and living in a survival mode, and that's it.
The survival mode is a good way to put it. Exactly.
And again, we talked about housing already, but you know, one thing that the poverty reduction, Manitoba Poverty Reduction Council has. I'm getting back on them mixed up. But what we have been asking for is like 150 over 10 years, 150 housing units. But I think that's been addressed by the Rapid Housing Initiative because, you know, already we've had, 120, 30 somewhat units built. And I also know that there's more money coming down the pipe and another probably $12 million coming down within the next year or so. And I think, you know, what's really special about that program is the fact that people have to do something within 12 months and actually get it built. And would you, continue to see that through with the Housing Authority and with other means?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good example of how when you focus on something, you can get it done. Right. And if you say, like, we're going to put money behind it and you have to do it in this time, it's amazing what we can accomplish when there's deadlines and things attached to it. So we need to take a look at those experiences and say, how do we do that just all the time? And that's just a really small sliver of the housing that we need. But definitely it would continue to do that. I hear this at City Hall a lot of times where people will say, well, housing is a provincial thing.
With the Rapid Housing Initiative, it does fall into cities' lap.
Exactly, and I think this is where the city needs to be pushing. Like, we need housing for residents. So as a city, we need to take control of that conversation and keep pushing it forward.
And one of the last things I want to talk about is that because I'm involved in the library system, I train library staff and management, and I'm part of the advisory board that created that community connections office or a kiosk there in the front of the library.
Yep.
You're after a 7-day library, and I think that's really important, for the citizens of the city, but also for the folks that use the library as a refuge, both in summer and in winter. I did that as a person who experienced homelessness. I did that. I can tell you how important that particular building is in downtown and others. Yeah. And, the other libraries across the city are used for the same purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important that a 7-day library program is I think it's a really much needed thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of people forget that not everybody has cell phones or access to internet or email or things like that. Right?
That's key to remember because, people go to the library. That's their form of communication to get on internet and use Facebook, et cetera. And people can't afford cell phone, or if they do, their minutes run out, and then where do they go, right? Mm-hmm. And now, actually, in the kiosk, in the community connection kiosk, there's a free phone that people can actually go walk in and use, which is really important. Good. And I think it's if we're going to expand library hours, we should extend the community connections hours as well, so people can have access to those things.
That's a good point. Now, something I hadn't considered, but that's a good point.
I think that you bringing that up, I saw that on your website.
I did.
I saw that and I thought that was really, really important. Mm-hmm. We're about to shut down for today and we're kind of running out of time, but is there anything else that you'd like to leave with the citizens of our city here?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing we were talking about during the break was my experience living with a family member who is in and out of homelessness over the years and facing addiction. That's his experience, and I won't go too much in depth in it, but it's definitely shaped my perception of homelessness as well. Mm-hmm. And he is facing mental health issues as well.
And the two go hand in hand.
And the two go hand in hand. And it's been definitely a challenge in my family to live with somebody who's facing this, but it's shaped what I've, my opinion. And, and then again, just learning from some of the folks that I've met in the shelters and the people who are working in the shelters and really thinking that I was a compassionate person before I started volunteering there. And then realizing that there's a whole level of compassion that I didn't even really know existed, and trying to just learn a little bit more every day from, from them that I could.
Well, if you want more intimate knowledge, come see a person with lived experience.
Yeah, definitely.
There's no better frame of reference than a person with lived experience, and that's why I do this show to really educate people from that perspective. Because there is no more important perspective. And I always say that we are the color commentators. If you're watching a sporting event, like a baseball game, football game, any sporting event, you'll have a color. You'll have a commentator calling the game the way you see it, and you have a color commentator, and you have a color commentator who's 100% of the time, 100% of the time, either a coach or a player.
Right. Who's lived somebody who's been there.
He's been there. He's lived the game. He's experienced it from one point or another. And that person adds the intimate details as to why this play was called or why this mistake was made. Mm-hmm. And that's what we as people with lived experience bring to the table when it comes to housing and homelessness.
Right.
We bring those intimate, bring that intimate knowledge to the game. And I want to thank you, Rick, for being on the show today.
Thanks
for
having me.
And coming on with short notice. I really thank you for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, every once in a while we get caught in a pinch when people decide not to come on air. That wasn't the case.
I appreciate the offer.
That wasn't the case in this
and
point
I'm close
in time,
by
actually.
Too. So.
That wasn't the case this time.
Yeah.
But you know, I've heard some good things about you from friends of mine who said I'd be voting for this guy.
Oh, thanks.
So
I appreciate that.
So I can tell you that much that you do have voters out there. But folks, you know, come back next week. First of all, I want to thank my producer. Technical support here in studio, Debbie, for being there for me every week and doing a great job, so I don't have to do that stuff that I'm not good at, and making this short run better. But folks, come back next week to another. We'll have another key stakeholder on. I'm not sure entirely at this point in time who it will be, but we'll have somebody on that will be of interest and has an interest in the homeless and issues of poverty and how we can change things in our city. Thanks. Come back next week. Take care.